And joining us today on Perspectives is Sigrid McRae. Sigrid is the author of the recent novel, A World Elsewhere, an American woman in wartime Germany. Sigrid holds a graduate degree in art history from Columbia University. She's worked as a researcher, translator, editor, and consultant. She is the co-author of Alliance of Enemies, a book about the undercover and unfortunately unsuccessful collaboration between OSS and the German resistance to end World War II. She writes on art and history, and she lives in New York. Currently, though, she's speaking to us from her lovely cottage in Maine. And you've gotten a lot of reviews. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But one of the reviews here that I want to read is by Edmund White. And it says, A World Elsewhere is a literary masterpiece, fully realized and a perfect work of art, a daughter's eloquent monument to her courageous mother. It is also a reminder that war spares no one, but wounds everyone it touches. Beautiful. So let's start with you, first of all. Have you always been interested in writing, perhaps, you know, just maybe even like journal writing, or did you actually write little stories and save them?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to write poems, and I wrote, you know, at the age of 12 or something, I wrote an autobiography. Imagine that. Kind of absurd, but anyway. No, I never really did think about it, and I spent a lifetime really in publishing as an editor, and then took up writing full-time only after I opted out of full-time editing job.
So did you think, as you were editing other people's work, perhaps thinking in the back of your mind, someday I'd like to try this, and then eventually you just took the step?
Well, what happened was a little more peculiar than that. A friend who is an agent came to me because he had sold a proposal to a publishing house on the basis of a proposal by someone who was attached to the German resistance to Hitler, very seriously attached. And his name was very, very important. But the publisher was not happy with the material that was coming in, and so the agent said, oh, could I help them out? He knew I spoke German, and he knew I read German, and he knew I had some editorial experience. So I thought about it, and I read a lot of the proposal, and I met the researcher, and I met the fellow whose grandfather had been involved in this Hitler plot and everything, and killed by Hitler, incidentally. And I said, yeah, sure, I'd like to do that. So that was the first time I actually wrote a whole thing for myself, or not for myself, but on behalf of someone else.
Is this the one that I mentioned earlier, Alliance of Enemies?
Yes, the Alliance of Enemies. The kind of a misnomer, because there were people who hoped it would be an Alliance of Enemies, but it turned out not to be, unfortunately. In any case, so I wrote that, and actually just before I started on that, I had found a box of letters that my mother had given me when she was breaking up her household in Maine, a beautiful inlaid box she'd bought in Morocco as a very young woman in the 20s. And she was breaking up her household, and she had a number of things she intended for me. And she stood by the huge firs by the back of the garage, and she said, your father's letters, and handed me this gorgeous box. I never knew my father. He died before I was born. He died on the Russian front, in very early in the Russian campaign. And, well, about 10 years later, I'd never wanted to open the box because it had a beautiful little key that went pling-plong, but it never opened the box. And I just felt that breaking it open was, I don't know, sort of a sacrilege or something. You know, here was this family reliquary, and I just felt it was wrong. And about 10 years later, my mother had just died, and I moved the box at one point, and the key went pling-plong, but opened the box. And I thought, ooh, magic. This is like a fairy tale or something. And then my husband confided that he had tinkered with the lock.
Ah, okay.
So I sat down in a miserable January weekend, and I started to read these letters from the young father, my father-to-be, whom I never, ever knew. And they were astonishing. They were in English because he spoke very good English from an early age, and French and Russian and German and a whole lot of other things. But anyway, my mother was American, and she knew French, but she didn't know any German. And so he was writing to her in impeccable English, and these letters just revealed an astonishing, fascinating, wonderful person. So I didn't quite know what to do with this. And then this other job came along, and I mean, I had always been familiar with family memoirs. My father's father had written a memoir of his life in Tsarist Russia, which was a civilization that really disappeared totally, absolutely with the Bolshevik Revolution. So I was familiar with all of that side of the family, and I'd known about it for a long time. But when this other job came along and our friend the agent said, oh, would I help him bring this book to fruition, I said, sure, it'll be interesting. And it was, and it took quite a long time and a lot of work, and it was fascinating. And then after my mother died, I found these incredible letters in an apartment of an old friend of hers who lived in New York for many, many years. And she lived not too far from us. I had occasionally brought her soup and company and cookies and whatever. And when she died, I was helping clean out her apartment. And in a rusty old file cabinet, I found an enormous cache of letters that my mother had written to Mary, her name was, between 1927 and 1947 with, well, a break for the war years because there was no communication then. So between 41 and 45, there was no communication at all. But other than that, these were letters that she had written to Mary, who was living in New York, about her life and about her children and about her husband and about the climate in Germany, which between 1927 and 1945 and 47, you can imagine what that was like. So it was fascinating, and this it opened a picture onto my mother that my father's letters had opened onto him, and I suddenly realized, oh, maybe there really was a book here. It was like the bookend to a possibility, because I had one half of the equation, but I never had the other half. So that's what happened.
We are visiting with Sigrid McRae. She is the author of the novel A World Elsewhere, An American Woman in Wartime Germany. You mentioned in your book about this box and that you admired it for many, many years, a lot of times. And when your mother handed it to you, as you mentioned, you didn't want to open it because you felt like, you know, gosh, this isn't supposed to be opened. When you opened it and you saw all these letters, in your book you state that you kind of thought that's what was in there. But tell us a little bit about when you read these letters, what did you feel in your heart? I mean, this is a man you never knew. He was your father. And yet here were words written, spoken to your mother, his wife. And perhaps you read about a side of your dad that you'd never heard about because perhaps your mother never shared that.
No, I mean, I'd heard about my father being charming and very well-read and super educated and witty and all kinds of things. But, you know, seeing it in the flesh, or at least in words, is very different. And it was astonishing to me to find this young man who was acutely aware of the kind of box that history had put him into. He refers to him at one point. He and my mother were going to get together, and my mother had written to him and said, oh, you know, I want to put on my best clothes and go on a bat with you. And he wrote her back and said, oh, do you insist on my wearing full dress? All right, fine, we'll do this, and we'll go and do something fabulous. But then he said, imagine, it's going to be an amazing night. Miss Mayflower, my mother being New England Mayflower stock, Miss Mayflower flirting with the Hun, in quotation marks. So he knew, he realized perfectly well at age 23 or whatever he was, that he was, in the eyes of the world, seen as the Hun. And for me, growing up in post-war America as I did, my father had always been something of an elephant in the room. He was, in my eyes, responsible for everybody who called me a Nazi and gave me Nazi salutes and said nasty things about, you can imagine, the whole nine yards. And here he was, so young and so completely aware of the box that history had and the label that history had affixed to him. And it clearly did not apply at all. So it was fascinating, and his letters painted a portrait of this passionate, lively, vivid, funny person who was determined to do something wonderful in the world and never got there because, well, he volunteered for the Russian front because he was drafted in any case, but As the father of five children, he wasn't ever in any really terrible danger, but he volunteered for the Russian front, and I think he knew perfectly well that it was not going to be easy or fun or possibly even winnable. But he saw it as a way of going home because he had seen himself and his family lose home to the Russian Revolution. And I think he saw it, as many people in Germany did at the time, as liberating Russia from Stalin and communism, which was seen as a dire and dreadful threat, as indeed it probably was, if you consider Stalin's history particularly. So he was painting this vivid, funny picture of himself that was far more lively and colorful than anything I could have ever done verbally. Which, by the way, I have to point out, this is not a novel. It's all nonfiction, okay? Just by way of interruption, because none of it is made up. It's all for real. So, yeah, there was my father, this living, breathing creature. And it made me realize at a certain point what I wanted to do was find out who he was, what had shaped him, losing home at 14, as he did, to the Bolsheviks, and spending life in growing up in Germany basically as an exile. God knows we have plenty of those people in the world right now. There is displacement and exile and misery and war as much as there ever has been, maybe even more, but we're certainly very well aware of it. So I was concerned to find out, you know, where all of this put me. I mean, here was the so-called Hun, an exile from the Russian communists, and a Miss Mayflower heiress from Hartford, Connecticut. And, you know, how did these people get together? Where did it put me, and what did it all mean about me? And it was just curious. So it led me into a long, long, long study of the history of that period, which is a giant canvas with major catastrophes and war and disaster in lots of places.
We're visiting with Sigrid McRae. She is the author of A World Elsewhere, An American Woman in Wartime Germany. I guess what you have been saying about your father and the names that you were called and things that were said about him, I guess brings up the quote, the proverb, phrase, whatever you want to call it, you can't judge a book by its cover. And no one knew what was inside until you opened that box and you discovered for yourself. And then slowly and little by little, you started discovering your father and then introduced him to the world via this book, A World Elsewhere. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was trying to figure out who on earth this man was. I had grown up with this absent kind of a family icon, but for me, kind of a bad egg, because he was what made me the so-called Nazi. And I discovered, first of all, that he wasn't a Nazi. He wasn't a bad egg. He wasn't the Hun. He wasn't any of those things. He was very different. He was shaped by forces that had no bearing on any of that stuff. And I was just interested about that whole period is so rife with, I hate to rhyme, but strife and misery and war and depression and wretchedness. But he managed to survive at least to the age of 36. And then it became the story of his wife, who never imagined that as a young debutante in Hartford, she would be, you know, stuck in a country at war with her own, with six children and American citizenship and no one to help, nowhere to go, and it's a complicated business. There isn't one history, but there are thousands, and this is something, millions, and this is something that the textbooks will never tell you. Everybody's story is different, so that's what that's really about.
In the story, the book that you tell us about your father, and one of the periods in history was, I guess, 1933, when Hitler suddenly shows his face, and out of somewhere, out of nowhere, this monster arises. And because of everything that's going on in Germany, he's able to convince them that he's the one who can bring them back and things can get better. But instead, they get worse. And unfortunately, your father is involved in all of this because of what's happening in Europe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hitler was for a time seen as maybe a hope. Germany was in the midst of a terrible depression, as was the U.S., as was everybody else. For my family in particular, my mother and had her American monies, but, you know, the stock market was in dire shape and all kinds of things. And my father at one point was hoping, he had finished a PhD in history and he knew all kinds of languages and he knew all kinds of other things, and he wanted desperately to be involved in a diplomatic career because he had seen what happened in World War I. And he decided diplomacy was the only way to go. He knew war was catastrophe. But in 1933, when Hitler took over, and within a matter of months, he had basically closed down everything to anyone who wasn't a Nazi or joined the party. And my father, in fact, actually at one point joined the party because he realized that if he didn't, he'd never find work. Then what happened was he defended the local minister against the Nazi party, which was making moves on the church, and when he defended the local minister, they threw him out of the party, and that is my father, out of the party and into jail. So much for joining the party in order to get work. It was a colorful and a very difficult time.
We're visiting with Sigrid McRae. Sigrid is the author of the book, A World Elsewhere, An American Woman in Wartime Germany. The story, as you write it, of course, is very personal to you, but I think the way it's written, and as the reader picks up and starts getting involved in this, it can be anybody's story. It can be your grandmother sitting in front of you and telling you about your grandpa. It could be your mom telling you about your dad. The way you wrote it is just very story-like. I mean, it's a story, but the way you write it and the way we read it as readers, we get ourselves engulfed into this, and all of a sudden we're part of that.
Well, thank you. I mean, that sounds wonderful to my ears. I had a lot of help. I had my parents' letters, and I had my mother's recollections. My father never got, his family all wrote memoirs, because in Russia, that's what people did. People wrote memoirs, and they wrote them essentially for their children, but they were a wonderful source. But, of course, they didn't give you the entire picture. You didn't get the historical context, and that involved an enormous amount of research, because putting these stories into, against this huge, complex canvas was always a challenge, to put it very mild.
What about once you turned it over to the publisher to review, did you get any maybe like, well, you know, this is a little too personal, or perhaps we need to change it to maybe appeal to more audiences, or, you know, it's so far away from World War II, post-World War II, that we should write it a little differently? But I don't see the publisher or your editor or anybody else telling you that, because, like I told you, it's written, you know, wonderful story being told.
Well, I did have a little bit of, oh, people want to hear more about you. And I said, you know, this story is not about me. I mean, it's about me only insofar as I was concerned to find out what my background was and where I somehow fit into this picture. Other than that, it wasn't about me at all, and I really was hesitant to do that. Some people said, oh, you should make this a novel. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't, because it was just too close. The letters were so vivid and so amazingly strong and such brilliant pictures of the people involved that they just spoke for themselves in a way I never could have.
Sigrid, did the letters bring out anything perhaps that surprised you or may surprise the readers to something that perhaps they weren't aware of or they were misled in the history teaching?
Sometimes there were letters from my father, who he had been in the reserves and he was drafted for the French campaign in 1940. And he came rather late to the French campaign, and he wrote frequently to my mother, and I have these letters. Now, one of the things that sometimes things alarmed me a little bit, because it sounded like appalling propaganda. He talks about seeing airplanes glittering in the sky, and they're all German, and they're all, you know, they're flying one way, and then they're flying another way, and they're all in perfect form, and this and that. And it sounded alarming, and it didn't sound to me like him in a way. It sounded very propagandistic. And I realized all the letters from the front were, of course, severely censored. So he's not about to say anything that is remotely critical of anything German, that is. Then I also realized I read a book by a well-known French writer, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, whom most people know from The Little Prince. He was a flyer, and he was flying reconnaissance for the French Air Force at that particular time. And his accounts of what was going on in France at that particular moment, he was flying literally 300 feet over my father's head, and his accounts are exactly the same. So I was infinitely relieved because I thought, oh, well, you know, at least this is not propaganda, because he said, Exupéry says, oh, you know, if there's a French plane in the air, you'd be shocked and alarmed because they're never visible. And if anybody sees a French plane, it's going to get shot down because any other French plane would assume it's German. So some of it sounded alarmingly like propaganda, but turned out not to be. And another scene in which my father describes the fellows in his outfit splashing around in summer heat in some village fountain. And he says, oh, they're all sunburned and robust and they're happy and look great. And I thought, oh boy, Aryan flesh, how wonderful. But apparently the local villagers agreed with him because they said, mais quand même, ils sont des beaux gars, you know, they're good-looking kids. So, as I say, there isn't one history, but there are millions, and it was always revealing. The most devastating for me was reading about my grandparents, who were really displaced people of the first order of magnitude. They had no life, they had no money, they had no nothing. They had been totally uprooted from everything they had grown up with and ended up in Germany, basically as displaced people. God knows, there are a lot of them around these days.
What about the letters from your mom to Mary?
Well, they were so giddy and carefree, and this is a person that I never knew growing up, because the mother I knew growing up was bone thin, weary, tired from hard work, hard times, a lot of misery. And she emerged in these young letters from the 20s and 30s when she first met my father, and they were in love, and they got married, and she describes their wedding and their honeymoon and the wonder of it all, and then new motherhood, and she's just ecstatic. She thinks the world is her oyster, and everything's going to be great. Of course, it turns out not to be that way at all, but here was this young woman just carefree and full of plans and hopes and enthusiasms, and then life came along and upended it all. So I was stunned because I did not recognize this young woman at all, who started out as a head over heels in love young fiance and turns into a bride, a young mother, then a war widow, and pretty soon a refugee. So it was fascinating. I showed my sister a draft at one point, and she said, you make her, meaning my mother, sounds like such a flibbertigibbet. And I said, what? They're her letters, not mine. Because she just was so giddy and carefree, and no, she was in Paris, and she was going to have Mary made wonderful underwear for her trousseau, things like that. Just stuff that you couldn't imagine. At least I couldn't imagine the hard-worn, hard-pressed mother I knew was ever like that. It makes you wonder, you know, you never really know your parents. And I certainly never knew that parent.
And of course, what changed was war and everything else. I remember in one of the books I read about Abraham Lincoln, as he and Mary Todd were riding in the carriage on the same day that he was assassinated, he said, the war's over now. We can go to California. I'd like to go to the Holy Land and see where this King David walked, and all these plans. And they were both, you know, very happy. And then, of course, we know how that ended. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. And not only that, but us opening up your world and sharing with us this very personal story. And for the benefit of our listeners, if you wouldn't mind giving us a website or something else that they could go to find out more about this book and also about yourself.
Yeah, the website is under my name, Sigrid McRae. and it's on WordPress, and anybody who is on the internet can go to Sigrid McRae and under WordPress, and they'll find my website, and they'll find all kinds of stuff.
Sigrid, again, thank you so much for sharing with us. It's been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate your transparency and opening up.
Well, thank you very much. And remember, it's not a novel.
Yes, ma'am.
Definitely nonfiction.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Eddie Rosales. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Science.